Hi, this is Chet Barr, and I'm here with Jason Weiss, the son of Ellen Weiss. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm doing great. So first of all, maybe a simple question. What was it like growing up with your dad?
What was it like growing up with my dad? Well, let's see, of course, there were the weekly book signings, summers in Switzerland, winters in the Caribbean. It was really a jet set lifestyle. My father was more like a baron than a father, really. I'm absolutely kidding. Growing up with my dad, let's see. Well, he's the only father I ever grew up with, so I really don't have much to compare it to. He was, let's see. He taught me absolutely nothing about sports. He taught me, let's see. He told me a lot about sports, that he was really fast in high school and he was a great basketball player, yet he never really wanted to teach me how to play basketball because I don't think deep down inside he ever wanted me to beat him. So I had to fend for myself on that. Let's see. He always built models when I was growing up, but I was never allowed to build the models with him. Maybe he just didn't want me to get better at gluing. Let's see, what else? He read a lot. I remember my dad always had like five or six books next to the bed, or in his office, and I never read when I was a kid. I was always outside or watching TV or something. And I remember we'd go on vacations a lot over the summer. My parents were big with vacations, and I remember he would take me into a bookstore and make me buy a book for me to read on vacation. My dad gives me a lot of he gives me a lot of shit about being an actor, not because he doesn't support it, but he always, even though my daddy likes to crack jokes, so they'll say, "Oh, my son's in musical theater. My son is in musical theater." I've done two musicals in my life, but obviously, I'm his son in musical theater. Well, it's his fault because let me tell you something that you all don't know about my dad. Every summer, we would take a trip down to Wildwood, New Jersey, and every summer they would have seen a different Broadway musical and had bought the cast album. Well, my dad might be the world's biggest fan of the musical Cats. And I would hear him in the front seat singing along to all the words Cats. Mr. Mistopheles, Jericho Cat, you name it, he was singing along. If you've ever heard my dad sing, it's not the most pleasant sound in the world. I mean, most people would rather listen to Alley Cats outside than listen to my dad sing. But I was subjected to musical theater as a small boy because of my dad's unhealthy passion for the musical Cats, little known Alan Weissbach. But on the flip side, he was also the first person to introduce me to Billy Joel. And
So there's a positive point there.
my dad's a big Billy Joel fan. Now I am too. But growing up with my dad was, it was fun. He wasn't like the normal dad, He had interests, and he didn't work for anybody. He was his own boss, which was, all my other friends, their parents left at 6 in the morning to work, and they'd come home and this and that. But my dad, he worked for himself, and that was different. And my dad always drove the nicest car, and everyone always. My dad was like a mystery to all my friends. It was kind of cool.
Maybe off the record, you could share with us what's maybe your feelings or your sister's feelings about all those people in this mentor program of his that are in that cult-like.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like people think he can cure them. Let's see, I guess it was about 2 years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago over the summer. It was down in Orlando, one of the speakers conventions. It was when my dad was getting an award for, I think it was, let's see, it was for
probably the Hall of
Hall of Fame.
Fame.
I think it was the National Speakers Hall of Fame or something.
Yes.
Okay. So I've only been to two of these meetings. The first one was in D.C., which was back when I was in college in the mid-90s when he got his CSP, and then this was the second one. So I was with a girl I was dating at the time. She came down to Florida with me. So we got off the plane, and we get onto the little shuttle bus, and it was a, I don't know what, a 45-minute ride to the hotel. So we're on the shuttle bus, and people are speaking, and people are talking to each other, and they all have their little badges on. And so I'm a very gregarious person, so I said, "Oh, are you going to the speakers convention?" And they're like, "Yeah, we are." And they, you know, being speakers, they none of them were really at a loss for words, and of course their favorite subject was themselves. So after about 30 miles of hearing what everyone did, they finally said, "Oh, well, what are you? Are you a speaker?" I said, "Oh, no, I'm just down here to my father's getting an award." And they said, "Oh, who's your father?" And I said, "Alan Weiss." And a hush came over the van. As if I had said, "My father is the second coming of Christ the Lord." It was insane. Now, I've heard my mother talk about these people for years, but I always thought she was yanking my chain. I was like, "Yeah, whatever, you know." So a hush came over the van, and there was you could literally hear the angels playing harpsichords. The girl I was dating at the time looks at me like, "What the heck just happened?" They said, "You're Alan's son?" And I said, "Yes." And I could feel this palpable need for them to get closer to me. Like, being his offspring, I would, by the transitive property, have some of his wisdom to impart upon them. And it was scary. It was, first of all, it was absolutely ludicrous. Father, he's a slob like all of you, you know. He picks his nose like all of you. he needs my mother to help match his clothing in the morning, you know. He's just like you. I see him outside of the pool. He works for an hour a day. He's not a guru, you know, but there's no talking to them. So then, you know, the ride is over, and we get to the hotel, and we're waiting online to book our rooms. And I turn around, and there's a gaggle of about 20 people behind me in, like, this semicircle of adulation. And the one woman who was in the van with me says, "That's him. That's Alan's son." And I felt like I was in the Beatles. Like, I had to run for cover. It was absolutely hysterical. So that was my first and thankfully only experience with the cult of Alan. But it's abnormal. It's absolutely beyond me. I think it's hysterical. There's definitely a short film somewhere in there.
That's hysterical. Thank you for that. Sure. What would you say was the best advice that you have received from him? And a different part of the question, what is the best advice that you ever given him?
Okay. That's a good question. My dad's given me, I like to joke around a lot, but in all seriousness, my father's given me a lot of good advice. How much I've taken, that's another story, but I think probably, see, my dad will remember me saying this to him. My father's the most successful person I know. I mean that in all candor. I think that he's very frequently the most intelligent person in the room, but he's also the most successful person in the room, not because he's worth the most money or he's done the most things, but because he absolutely loves what he does. And aside from being a cowboy astronaut, I can't think of anything else in the world that he would rather do. Now, that goes hand-in-hand with the advice he gave me when I was younger, because he told me, he said, "Your mother and I work as hard as we do, and we've done everything we've done, so that you and your sister won't have to struggle the way we had to." And so he told me the most important thing is that you have to be happy. And money is money. What's it for? You can't take it with you. Money is for making your life happier by buying the things you want, by helping others who don't have it because you have the ability to do things for your family. Whatever you think money is for, that's what it's for, but it's not for hoarding. So money is not the benchmark of success and happiness, but to follow your passion. My parents sent me to private school my entire life. Mm-hmm. They've been paying for me to go to school since I was an infant. And not very cheap schools, the most expensive school in Rhode Island. And mm-hmm. then when they sent me to college, it was one of the five most expensive schools in college. All of this for their only son, the only man to be carrying on the wife's name, to become an actor. And not once has my dad said to me, Jason, it's time to get a real job. Not once have I, and many times have I turned to ask my dad, hey, can you help me out? I need some money. Has he said no? Now, there are times when he's like, you know, you got to grow up now. But he's always there to help because his advice for me to follow my passion, to follow, and he never said follow your dream. And that's one of the things that really means the most to me, because when people say that they're in the arts, they're an actor, a musician, a painter, or any sort of artist, people say, oh, you're following your dream. And what they don't understand is that's one of the most patronizing things you can say to an artist. It's not my dream. It's not something that's unattainable. It's not something that I go to sleep and this is the only time it can be real. It's a passion. It's something I love to do. And so he really put in my mind that that was okay. And he said, do what you love, and this is what I love to do. And I took that advice. Now, as far as advice I gave him, I don't think it's really advice. I think it's more of a question I posed to him.
Mm-hmm.
I was very young. We lived in New Jersey, so I was under the age of 9. I was probably around 4 or 5 years old. For some reason, I was very articulate as a child. I could speak very well. Maybe because I was a 10-month baby, who knows? But the point was, I could speak very well, and so even though I didn't know that many words, the words I knew sounded like an adult, not like a child. Well, one day, when I was young, my sister, who's a year older than I am, she was crying about something. And if you know my sister, that's not an odd thing. My sister cries about everything. And so she was crying about something, and my father, who at the time did not have the greatest rapport with children, I think he's going to be an excellent grandfather, but I think it's because he had my sister and I as his, you know, as his minor league opening act. When I was younger, my dad didn't really understand children. I mean, he knew that they were there, but he didn't really understand what they were for. And so my sister's crying, and obviously my mother was nowhere to be found, because if she was, he would have deferred to her. So she's crying, and of course my father's sage-like wisdom to my 5-year-old sister, who is probably crying because she stubbed her toe, who knows, says, Danielle, you know, crying never helps. That's his advice to a 5-year-old girl. Crying never helps. Of course we know now crying helps a lot. So I, 4 years old, turn to my sister and say, you know, Danielle, he's right. Crying never really helps. And so my sister, who is prone to cry but also prone to stomp, stomps away. A ton each, stomping up the steps. So my dad looks at me, looks down at me, his only son, and I look up at him, and he gives me a wry smile of understanding. And I look up at him, and I say, actually, Dad, what does help? And I think for the first and maybe only time since then, he was at a loss for words. I don't think he knew what hit him. And it's not advice, but I think he saw something in me that day that made him realize, okay, maybe this kid's kind of interesting. You know, maybe there's something to work with here. And we still talk about it in family circles. I don't know that I necessarily remember saying it, but I remember it through everybody else's memories now. That's probably the most poignant thing I ever said to my dad, I guess, if that answers your question.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you for that. Is there a particular advice that you can think of that actually backfired?
That actually backfired? Yeah, let's think. The advice that backfired? I'd have to think about that.
All right.
Because I don't... My relationship with my father is probably very different than all of your relationships with him, because I don't seek out when I was younger, I didn't seek out his advice. It was very frequently presented to me, but it was neither wanted nor appreciated. So I didn't really take it that frequently when I was young, which pretty much explains why I'm in the situation I'm in now. So So I can't think of it backfiring that frequently because I rarely heeded his advice.
That's a great
maybe if I had listened to, maybe if I had taken Million Dollar Consulting class when I was in high school, or if I had subscribed or become one of his mentorees as a child, perhaps my life would be different now. But when it's your father, everyone thinks their old man's as full of shit as anybody else. So, it doesn't matter that Fortune 500 companies paid my dad lots of money for his advice and that he then took that money and paid my tuition. To me, it was just like, yeah, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. Never been there. What do you know? So I think the backfiring is me not taking it. That's probably it.
You share such great information with us. And, my final question, although you already gave me such great, great stories, but what's your favorite Alan story or favorite funny story that took place with the family, with you? Anything that comes to mind?
There's three that will go down in the Hall of Fame. The first one is, and these are in no particular order because I can't remember chronologically when they happened, but we were in California. We lived in California very briefly in, I believe, 1978 or 77. We lived there for like 13 or 14 months. So my parents made some friends up there, so we would go back to visit when I was young. We moved back to New Jersey, so we would every now and again go back to California to visit our friends. So my dad likes to live out his childhood dreams, okay, or his childhood aspirations. And I respect him for it. It's great. Because when my dad grew up, his family would have needed two promotions to be considered poor. That's how little money they had.
Yeah.
And my father, when you look at our family, don't get me wrong, I love my grandparents, I love my aunt. But when you look at them, you have to say, where the hell did this man come from? Because it's like he's an alien compared to them. He is the complete opposite. It's almost like if you ever watch Family Ties in the 80s, that sitcom, he was Alex P. Keaton. He was in this family of people, and he just doesn't fit. So he didn't have any of the things he wanted growing up. He read a lot, and there were a lot of things that he was interested in. He didn't get a chance to do them. So now that he's older and has the means, he likes to do them. For example, the crossing on the Queen Mary for my parents' 40th anniversary. My mother gets more seasick than anyone I've ever met, but he didn't care because he wanted to cross on the Queen Mary. So that's cool. We afford him that luxury. So on one particular instance, we're in California. My dad thought it would be a good idea to take the replicant of the Orient Express. They have a reproduction of it from San Francisco down to, I believe, San Diego, and it's an overnight train. And we were like, oh, yeah, that'll be great. So we had a big old sleeping car. So my dad, member of Mensa, published author, owner, and CEO and founder of the Summit Consulting Group, advisor to tycoons and barons of industry, decides to go to the bathroom and can't figure out how to flush the toilet. So he's in the bathroom, can't figure out how to flush the toilet. So he's in there for about 5-10 minutes, and finally we hear this screech of, ah! He turned the shower on. He's in the bathroom, tries to flush the toilet, turns the shower on, gets covered in water, and he comes out fuming. Because if something goes wrong, it's never his fault, it's a design problem, or how could this ever be this way? And he starts, who the hell was that? Blah, 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 I can't believe this is tough, I'm back. I walk into the bathroom, I said, well, did you try pushing the flush button and flush it? I think I was, 8 or 9 years old. And it was hysterical. It's one of the family things that we like to talk about. Another thing which happened around that same time, when we were living in New Jersey, my father had either just started the Summit Consulting Group. I think he had just started the Summit Consulting Group. I think that's what it was. And he had a client coming over. Now, like most families, we had a living room and a dining room. But we were in the living room or the dining room maybe twice a year. So they were off limits. We didn't have plastic covers on the furniture or anything. Just there was no reason to go in there. So we were in the dining room. We were going to have breakfast. And my dad, before this guy shows up, it was a client or an associate, I don't remember who he was, he lectures my sister and I about our table manners. Do not spill your drinks. Do not play with your food. Do not blah, 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 blah. And it's like, whatever, you know, who cares? We're 5 years old. So he goes on this diatribe of about 10 minutes telling us what to do and what not to do. And so the guy finally gets there. We sit down to dinner. We sit down to breakfast. Sorry, it was breakfast. And, you know, we introduce each other, blah, blah, blah. My dad proceeds to grab his orange juice, go to drink it, misses his mouth, and then drops the glass on the table. And it's one of these moments that is such poetic justice, because he has been bitching at us about being so prim and proper, and then proceeds to make a complete ass out of himself. And it was hysterical. I loved it. It'll be forever ingrained in my mind. That was lovely. And then the third is, you see, my father, well, like I said, grew up with absolutely nothing. But if you know my dad now, he's the biggest snob I've ever met in my life. And I don't know how that happened. Like, he is literally he's a self-made man, but he's also a self-made snob. He was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He wasn't even born with a plastic spoon in his mouth. They couldn't afford a spoon. So now he expects this, expects that. It's like, where did that come from? So he got in the car. This had to be in the 80s. He gets in the car. And I don't know if it was a rental car or a loaner car because, you know, his car was getting fixed or something. So he gets in the car. He's driving along. And he has to put the window down. And he's like, what is wrong with this car? I guess because it was a loaner, and it was probably like a Honda or a Toyota or something like that. It was, you know, a perfectly good car, you know, it gets you from point A to point B. And he said, there's no way to put the window down. There's no button for the window. My God, this is such a bottom-of-the-barrel car that the windows don't even go down. So he had to open the door. I don't know if he was at a drive-thru or at a bank teller. He had to open the door, blah, blah. He gets home. He gets back to the house. And he says, can you believe this car? I mean, it's one thing that I have powered locks, but the window doesn't even go down. My mother gets in and cranks the window down. Says, Alan, you insufferable snob, you have to crank it. Because he had put it out of his mind. It's such a plebeian task to have to manually crank down the window. Oh my God, say it isn't so. I might break some finger sweat putting a window down. And it's just, it's so my dad. Because when he was a kid, he would have done backflips to be in a car that you could crank the window down. And now it never even occurs to him that that still happens. So those are three Alanisms from when I was a kid. There's plenty more, but those are three that really stand out to me.
Well, Jason, first of all, you have me here in tears. I'm trying to be quiet so I don't override the recording, but thank you so much for this. And I'll tell you, I can now absolutely see where Alan gets his stage talent and ability to beautifully craft his funny stories. So thank you for sharing all of that. I really appreciate that.
Not a problem.